Welcome to the Packet Pushers, the data networking podcast where real engineers get together to talk about real networking, real life, real everything. It's just because that's the way we are. And here in the virtual boardroom, we don't have to apologize that you, the listener, don't know what a network is because you work on it every day. Today, I'm joined by a Mr. Ivan Peponiak. How are you, sir?
Pretty good, thank you.
Life been treating you well?
Oh, yes. Summer has been fantastic. The weather was great, so I enjoyed it. Now I'm overloaded, which is a sweet problem to have, I'm told. So, yeah, life is good.
So you're back from your summer holiday. You were planning to take quite a bit of time off, if I remember right.
Well, yeah, we were. Well, the actual holidays was only 2 weeks, and then it was more or less Mr. Mom.
Ah, okay.
But that was fun. That was great fun. So I enjoyed it.
They kept you too busy?
Well, they definitely kept me busy.
Yeah, and it's all in a good way, I suppose.
Absolutely.
And so what we wanted to do today is I recently wandered off to San Jose to see Brocade's launch. So let me just express a bit of a disclosure here. Brocade did pay for my travel and my accommodation while I was there. I got the same accommodation as everybody else, which is the hotel next door to their office. And thanks to them for inviting me because, unfortunately, I couldn't afford to pay for it myself. And from my point of view, I actually got to rub shoulders not only with the executives, which wasn't perhaps as interesting as you would think, and spend most of my time hanging around a tech room. So they'd converted one of the rooms in the front there after the presentations. We could actually go and talk to the tech leads and the product managers and really get at some products. And I had a great time wandering around talking to these people and finding out stuff about Brocade products that I didn't know before. And all of a sudden, I feel a bit more hopeful, a bit more inspired about what Brocade's doing than perhaps I was before. And maybe that's just because when you learn some stuff, you feel like you're more in control of what's going on. And Brocade has some stuff, some switching the gear that's actually worth discussing. So it's just Ivan and me today, and we're just going to talk a little bit about Brocade. You can refer to Ivan's article. He wrote a great post about their announcement. You got briefed as well, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, I got like an hour-long briefing.
I had a half hour.
Yeah, really detailed. Well, yeah, you know, I ask a few questions.
Before the show goes to air, I did record a podcast while I was at the event with Pramal Savla and Sanjay Hemchowdhury. And that's in the priority queue feed. So finding out more, go and head over there and find that and listen to them talk about their product. Now, naturally, that's the Brocade story. And so I thought Ivan and I would talk about the other side of the story. Why don't we kick it off and say 384,000 MAC addresses in a single switch. Like each switch can hold 384,000 MAC addresses. That seems like a lot.
It is.
Good thing.
Well, you know, on the other hand, they talk about a fabric with 8,000 ports. Well, we'll get there.
Yep.
But, you know, a few thousand ports is realistic. And with these monster servers now, I mean, let's say you're running VDI or something, then you get like 100 VMs per server. This is only 3,000 servers. It's not much.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like much. So if you're using L2 networking to do that, you've got to hold 100 servers, 100 virtual machines per 1,000 servers is 100,000 MAC addresses.
Exactly.
Even some of the server densities in some of the hosting farms are actually at that density now, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
The Linux ones, you know, where they're very, very thinly sliced.
Yeah.
And so it's, if you're using an L2 network to do that, then that's if all you're using is these VDX 8770 switches.
Well, even if you're not using L2 network, if you're doing layer 3 switching in the core, if you're not doing it on the edges, then the core switches, even though everything is nicely segmented and everything, the core switches have to know all the VLANs. They have to know all the MAC addresses. They have to have everything in their ARP caches.
Yes. To be able to find all of the machines.
Yeah. So unless you're doing layer 3 switching on the top of rack switches, and, you know, not many people want to do that because then you get into the VM mobility issues, the core switches still have to know everything.
Yes. They still have to know where every MAC address is everywhere.
Now, exactly.
The other thing that came out in the podcast is they're also talking about 384,000 L3 routes. So there's actually a second TCAM to just do L3 routing.
Yeah.
Which is astonishing.
Well, let's say I'm not sure how they are going to position this switch. Because this is way too much for a data center switch. And it's not enough for someone that would receive full routing from the internet.
Yeah, but if you're, let's say you're doing like, we've always guessed that Amazon is kind of like a layer three edge.
So yeah, that's true, but layer three there is hidden on the hypervisor.
Yes, that's right. But at that point, then you've only got 8,000 ports, so presumably you've only got 8,000 L3 addresses. Unless
not even that, because you hopefully you would summarize.
Yeah, that's right.
And they have 128K ARP entries, which means that the moment you start doing real layer 3 switching in these boxes, even though you have 380,000 MAC addresses, that doesn't help you because you can only have 128,000 adjacent VMs.
Yeah.
Which is realistic, by the way.
Yeah, that's a lot. Still a lot of VMs.
Yeah.
Too many people, because by the time you get to 1,000 VMs, you probably run out of VLANs. Even.
Well, you see, it depends on what the use case is.
Yeah.
If you have a VDI farm, you can easily have, let's say, 100 people in one VLAN.
Yeah, you can.
If you're running VDI, you could have 100 clients per VLAN. Well, yeah, 100 clients per VLAN or 1,000 clients per VLAN. So you wouldn't run out of VLANs.
No, that's true, I suppose, if you're running them at that sort of density.
Yeah.
So it just seems like it's big in all sorts of directions. And it doesn't.
Well, you know what the biggest big is? In the large chassis, supposedly they have 4 terabits of bandwidth per slot.
That's the target bandwidth for the backplane, and they're suggesting that maybe they can even go beyond that in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. So right now they're not using... They're using like 10% of that capacity or something like that.
Well, it's the same thing. So the backplane on an Arista switch is 3.96 terabits per second on an Arista 7000.
No, but this is per slot.
So, same as an Arista switch. Sorry, yes, per slot. Yeah, the backplanes are all per slot.
So it's like, wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of bandwidth. And I think the Nexus 7000 sort of in that sort of area as well. It's a couple of terabits per second for each slot in the end.
Not sure about that. You have the fabric modules, and the fabric module has how much switching capacity?
So today you have 550 gigabit per second in the Gen 2 fabrics, and you can put up to 5 of them to give you 2 terabits per slot.
Okay. Good enough.
Good enough, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think the Nexus goes that there's another step higher, but what I'm actually hearing is that I heard rumors, and it was literally scuttlebutt, is that the Gen 2 fabrics are the end of the line for that chassis. But I absolutely don't know if that's true or not, and I haven't got a way of checking. I've got no access to Cisco to ask if that's true or not. But you never know.
Even if that's true, that's still 10 years away.
Yeah, I mean, 2 terabits per slot. Like, 2 terabits is 20 by, what, 100 gig ports?
Yeah. How many of those do you need?
Well... In the next 5 years, you are not going to be connecting 100 gig to your servers.
Exactly.
You know,
and there are only so many lolcats people can watch.
That's true. So, you know, that's what the point they wanted to make when I was talking to them was that, you know, 4 terabits per second per slot, we want to see this as a 5 to 10 year investment cycle.
Exactly.
And so that's the pitch around that. Today, the cards, they're shipping a 48 by 1 gig, a 48 by 10 gig, and a 12 by 40 gig. So they're getting a half a terabit.
Like everyone else.
Yeah, pretty much. But one of the things they were quite chuffed about was the fact that it's their own silicon. So they are making their own silicon, they're proud of it, and they think their silicon's pretty fancy.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Their silicon is still the only one where you can combine multiple physical links into a port channel that has perfect load balancing.
So L1 bonding.
Yeah, that's what they call it.
Yeah. So but the limitation with the L1 bonding is that it has to be ASIC to ASIC.
Yes, absolutely.
So a 48 port module is 6x8 port bundles. And so you can only have 8 by ports bonded to another 8 port bundle, and those 8 ports all have to be on the ASIC, so it would be ports 1 through 8. You know.
Yeah, so it has to match perfectly on both ends.
That's right. And then they have what they call their frame spraying algorithm, which I thought was quite neat. they don't rotate or balance. They actually spray the frames across the available ports and then reorder them back again on the other side.
Well, no. Actually, they're doing something even fancier. Mm-hmm. You can't reorder them on the other side because then you would have to buffer them. So you know how multi-link PPP is really slow and CPU intensive. That's because it's reordering.
Yeah.
What they're doing is they're delaying packets on the sending side.
Right.
So if you have a long packet and it goes on port one, and then you get a short packet and you put it on port two, you know when to start sending it. That's the trick. So you start sending it at the moment that it will be guaranteed to arrive after port one, after packet one has arrived on port one.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember. The other company that does this is Nodal. They do something similar.
Oh,
they
I know nothing about them.
Yeah. I'm just saying that. I've kind of forgotten the exact algorithm that they use, but they do the same thing. They have this frame spraying or equal bonding at PHY in their own, and that's because the PHY is actually built into the silicon. Mm-hmm. The only thing they have on the interfaces is the traces. So all the switching is actually done, and the switch fabric and the PHY is all in one chip. And so they can, balance it all out that way. It's a tiny, tiny little chip too. It's the size of it's about 3/4 of an inch square. Absolutely tiny switch. That chip.
Oh, wow. No, I tried to figure out what they're doing. So I went to their website, and the only documentation they had was fabric configuration guide, which was like 10 pages long.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was it. And I was like, excuse me?
they're still
don't get it.
they don't. They're a small company. I've been down to visit their premises. They're actually in England. They're actually a company in the UK, and I've been down to visit them and spoken to their chief scientist and their CTO. Pretty interesting people. They're a spin-off of the old supercomputing. So Bristol in the UK used to be a big supercomputing area where supercomputers were developed and then built and sold. And when that went, these people are spun off from the interconnect team of a given supercompute company from the 90s.
And that's wow.
And that's where they get their expertise from in manufacturing and all that sort of stuff, because that was all in one team down there in Bristol. So it's not all in Silicon Valley or India, weirdly. You might think it all is, but there it's not. So some other things. So that L1 bonding is pretty neat. Then they've got their L2 solution, which is based around their VCS, which is their implementation of Trell. The good thing about their VCS is they're focusing heavily on the automation of it. That is, it's really easy to use. You just plug it in and it auto-configures effectively. You basically just say this is an L2 port. And they really, really wanted to say drive simplicity through core innovation, and then went on to say things like we emphasize the radical simplification is required to achieve scale and operational simplicity, migration from manual configuration and control to automated provisioning. And then,
Greg, were you attending an MBA course?
This is what I'm saying. This is what they're promoting. They're talking about self-forming fabrics to reduce the administrative load. Reminds me of, and I actually wrote a note to myself here. Reminds me of what made FDDI great in 1998.
let's put it this way: they are more or less the only ones that figure out that, hey, if we can discover that there is a switch on the other end, let's do something sensible with it. Mm. I mean, every single box in the market has LLDP. How hard is it to figure out that there's your switch on the other side of the link?
Not very.
And configure the fabric on it?
Yeah, well, that's quite
right. Excuse me.
Yeah. It shouldn't
be. How many vendors are doing this out of the 15 vendors that produce data center switches?
A lot of them are waiting for the Trident. Yeah, that's right. And that's a difference. That's a difference for them. You can literally, if you actually go and spend some time configuring, you can literally pull out two brocades, any of the VDX switches, and you just connect the ports together and you just say they're Trill, they're VCS ports, and the configuration's finished.
Yeah.
It really is that simple. And because they're not stuck with a whole bunch of other – and because a lot of their QoS features are built into the VCS, so they enable DCBE type functions within their VCS using their FOSPF, FSPF algorithm to distribute that, a lot of that configuration data.
No, but DCB has that built in. So once DCB gets properly implemented, and that's a long way off, there's this thing called DCBX.
Yes.
Where it's like PPP negotiation. You see, two switches can... One switch can say, I think this is the right thing to do, and the other one can say, I think that's the right thing to do, and then they can negotiate what they both think is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And if you do this correctly, and I don't think anyone has done that correctly, then you could just configure quality of service on one central switch, and it would be auto-propagated throughout the whole DCB data center.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Makes sense. I just like this automation idea. You just plug it in. Now,
yeah,
more importantly,
and
the other thing that struck me when I was thinking about it was I can now not – so today when I'm doing working in spanning tree and everything and everybody falls down and Knipta fits every time I say I want to plug an Ethernet port on or off because there'll be a loop. The VCS thing, you can literally just plug in more ports while it's live and you just get more bandwidth between two points.
Be careful.
Well, I mean, is that realistic? I mean aren't we at the point with Trill where it is sort of self-configuring? You'd have to take a risk outage. I mean, you wouldn't
well,
do that the other day. But.
Configuring, well, connecting a new switch to an existing network, yes. That's not the problem. The problem is when you get the forwarding loop at the user-facing port.
Yeah. So what? Yeah. The Trill, what I'm saying is in the VCS core, you could probably do a fair bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, you know what I love most? Their implementation of MLAG.
Okay.
Because you can connect the server or whatever is on the other end using the link aggregation. You could connect it to any four switches in the fabric. And you don't have to configure anything. It just works.
So
it's not like VPC and the peer link and... split brain detection on a separate link, and if the peer link goes down, we have this problem, and if the heartbeat goes down, we have the other problem, and it's only two switches, and you have to be very careful, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
That's, here, I didn't realize that. I didn't realize they had a multi-chassis lag that was self-configuring.
Well, probably you have to tell the switch that while you did, you know, run LACP on this port or something, but yeah.
That's pretty awesome. You don't have to do you can just multi-chassis and up to four, not just two, but four.
Right now it's up to four.
That sounds like it's almost custom made for certain sites. Right now I've got a problem where my reseller can't even configure VPC correctly. They figure ever getting it wrong.
Well, but you should be able to do that now.
Yeah, well, you know, it should be, but, you know. Nobody wants to train anybody in the current financial environment. It's getting very difficult to get things done.
Yeah, and no one wants to pay for the services, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So, no, you're not getting trained, and no, we will not pay for the services. Figure it out.
Okay. So, moving on, VXLAN. L3 multi-gateway is probably the next best thing to talk about.
Oh, yeah, that one's good.
That's really good. One MAC address, four routers, and just sorts itself out.
Yeah, I don't know where the... See, this is what's bothering me. They have all these weird limitations. Why four?
So I spoke to the two product managers about that in this podcast on Priority Queue, and they said their intention is to go to every switch in the network, but it's four today.
Yeah, well, that's what would make sense, because once you anycast I know what it is. They're anycasting MAC addresses.
Ah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, they can only accept the same MAC address from four different R bridges.
Right, yeah.
Ah, that's it.
Okay, so that's a limitation. And then they're going to have to do something very different to scale it out to 24 switches.
Yeah, they'll just have to change some algorithm somewhere.
Yeah. And they'll be able to use the Trill protocol to carry that on. They'd have to have the routes in every router. The next hop would just have to be... Well, the ASIC's got all the fundamental pieces, so it's got...
Well, you see, the problem they're having is that they haven't gone all the way with the fabric thing. Because in Juniper's QFabric, you configure the whole thing as one device.
Yeah, true.
So when you configure layer 3 switching between two VLAN interfaces, you have no option of not configuring that on every switch. It just happens. And here, because you're still configuring individual switches, you're not configuring the whole thing as one entity. Yeah.
You have to synchronize the table state or, you know, synchronize state.
Well, because you don't configure the whole thing as one device.
Yeah.
It could be that some of the switches are layer 2 and some of the switches are layer 3.
Uh-huh.
So you can never guarantee that every single edge switch will be layer 3 switch configured for these two VLANs.
Yeah, you'd have to have some sort of overlay or some sort of tagging on the packet to say you've already been routed to the destination or something.
So they cannot guarantee that they will be able to do layer 3 switching in every single device. So they have to anycast the MAC addresses, and probably that's where the limitation of 4 sources for anycast comes in.
Right. But that works because most people will be running a leaf spine design, and you'd have 4 switches in the spine and 20 switches at the leaf, or up to 4 switches.
Yeah. Well, if I would do a leaf spine design, then, well, yeah, you could have 24 switches. But that would be a pretty small fabric. You wouldn't want to have the big switches in the rack, would you?
Well, if you have if you get the 8-slot 8770 with 40 gig and 100 gigs in it, well, today you have 40 gigs, you'd get 12 40 gigs per slot.
No, the problem is you wouldn't want to connect the servers directly to that box, would you?
To the 8770? No, you'd probably have 67 somethings. You know,
yeah, exactly. You would have the pizza boxes in racks.
At top of rack or end of rack, yeah.
Yeah, or end of row, whatever, your density is.
Yeah, but they run Trill. They run VCS.
Yeah, but you can only have 24 switches in the fabric.
Okay, yes, that's true. Today.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it could scale out beyond that. I didn't actually ask that question.
No, it's still 24.
Still 24.
Yeah.
But if you had 24 8770s, it would still be pretty big. Well, on the flip side, right, compared to Juniper,
you would have interesting cabling problems.
True. But compared to QFabric, QFabric needs you to buy that big-ass switching fabric in the bottom, the big 4-slot or the 8-slot. Plus the management plane has to be bought separately, and so you've got to do your whole data center at one to make that once to make that number to sort of come like that. That's first step to enter in is very high, whereas with Brocade you could start with 2 switches and then connect another 2 and build a fabric.
Juniper will tell you that you can start with their top of rack switches,
the QF3500,
and then you would connect them to whatever spine you have today. Mm-hmm. And then when you grow enough, when you have enough of their switches, you just swap the spine and you're done.
Yeah.
That's the story they like to tell.
Yeah, but I don't see it that way. I see it at some point. You've got to pay the balloon payment at the end of the lease. Now, whether you pay the balloon payment up front and then – but the Brocade thing is more of a traditional switch. You could just buy 2 or 4 of them and form a fabric out of the 2 or the 4 and then just start growing from there with your VMs. Couple of other things then. They still have the QoS capability. They still have the AMPP, which is their automatic migration of port profiles.
But that's good, yeah. That's fabric-wide.
So and more importantly, this ASIC that's in the VDX family, which includes the 6000 and the 8000, has deep awareness of the packet. So one of the things they wanted to emphasize to me was that they actually do quite deep inspection, and they can pick out their AMPP feature can go right into the VXLAN. So not yet, but in the future, even though the traffic's embedded in a VXLAN, they can still see what's going to happen. They can't terminate VXLAN in the current silicon. That's a future gen, but they can inspect it.
Absolutely true.
Which gives them something that's quite a neat feature, because that gives the AMPP quite a new twist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not here yet. That's 6 months away, or, soon. for all definitions of soon, it works on PowerPoint.
Yes, it works great in PowerPoint.
VXLAN, the capabilities are not VTEP. But the flip side of this is I actually went and spoke to the ADX people because they did mention in a slide during the presentation that VXLAN is terminated in their ADX platform. So they do VTEP today.
No. The software is still not out on the website.
Oh, okay, right.
I checked today.
All right.
But yes, it's very soon. It's in the next software release.
Okay.
What?
Well, they said to me it's shipping today, so maybe I heard what I wanted to hear.
Well, it may be shipping, but maybe it's not GA.
Okay. So, but the neat thing about the ADX, which I discovered, is it's actually a switch fabric with three FPGAs inside.
Mm-hmm.
And that box basically means it's a programmable networking device. So it's all the advantages of silicon, and they just have to decide what money they want to spend on developing new FPGA libraries. So today the ADX is a load balancer, SSL termination device, and a few other bits and pieces. And so adding VTEP to it is actually quite neat. It wasn't, not huge.
Yeah, it would also solve quite nicely, the problems we are having today with how do we terminate VXLAN. Because terminating it on a switch that only does VXLAN to VLAN or VXLAN to VRF, it's like, changing the flavor of your pasta.
Yes. But unfortunately, the ADX today doesn't do MPLS VRFs.
But do you need them?
Well, I do, because if I'm going to terminate most of the security policies say for banking institutions or most people, they say anything that's in a VRF is secure, anything that's not in a VRF is insecure.
No, but do you need a – well, yeah.
So if I terminate –
situations where you need a VRF.
Yeah. If I'm just terminating one VXLAN in one VTEP, then no, I don't. But if I need to terminate a half a dozen...
It depends on how they will do their implementation. But now imagine that you would be able to have the outside IP address on some VLAN, and then all the inside servers for a certain outside IP address would be in a VXLAN segment.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you need a VRF there?
Today they can't do the VTEP in context. They can only do it in the global system.
Get lost.
So, perhaps
that was so delighted.
Yeah. So you can do ADX can do context, but I can't terminate a VTEP in each context. I imagine that's just a software thing that they'll say. But it's a bit like the latest ASA code finally does VLAN and routing instances in context.
Mm-hmm.
It only took 4 years.
Yeah, and they do NAT6.6, so Tom will be delighted.
Bring it on. But, they do have a hardware-based VTEP. Runs at wire speed, goes fast. It's got some limitations, but you can probably work around them, which was what I found. Nobody else is doing VTEP except Arista.
Yeah. Cisco, we haven't seen what they will actually be doing because the software is not out yet.
No. And Cisco's talking about doing it in the Nexus 1110 appliance.
Yeah, it will be a VM.
Yeah, inside the Nexus 1000 virtual supervisor hardware.
It could. If it's a VM, it can run on anything.
Yeah. Oh, no, it won't be a VM. It's actually running on the Nexus. You know how you have a Nexus supervisor and you go and buy a Nexus 1010, which is basically a UCSC series server.
Yeah.
That's where they're terminating in there.
And then you have some sort of hypervisor, and then you have VMs running on that.
Yeah, everybody's got a hypervisor these days.
Yeah. I told you, it's a VM.
Yes, you're probably right, but it doesn't look like one to us. It's not inside a VM.
Of course not. It's totally different.
What else was there? Anything else? Layer 3 multi-gateway?
Not that I would remember.
They talked a lot about SDN. They didn't just talk about SDN in terms of OpenFlow, although they do have a fully OpenFlow compliant solution.
Yeah, MLX has OpenFlow, yeah.
Yeah, and the VDX will soon. and they are keen on that because they see automation and programmability as something that's going to change the way the industry works. I think all the major vendors do, so that's hardly, you know, news.
Let's see where it brings us.
Yeah, that's true.
Here I have something about something new on the MLX routers. Would you remember what that is?
No, I didn't get to those. I stopped at the ADX and the OpenFlow and the OpenStack.
I think what they have, if I got it right, is they have a new 10 gig interface card.
Oh, okay.
So, and the biggest MLX, they can terminate 720 10 gig ports. And they can run IPv4, IPv6, MPLS, and OpenFlow on every one of them.
That was important for them, is to have that. They're emphasizing that, and that the thrust of that was to say, we really get automation. We get the value of programmability and automation, and we want to see that and encourage that.
Hey, come on. What they're really saying is anyone can program our TCAM.
Yes, very much so.
Actually, what they're saying, what everyone that has OpenFlow is saying, is I want to bid in public tenders.
Now you're getting really cynical.
No, it's a check mark on the next generation internet they're building in US.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. They've done very
That's
well.
That's why they took 100 gig from Brocade to build it, because it has OpenFlow.
That works.
Yeah, I'm not cynical.
No. Well, Cisco's got...
No.
Dun, da, da. So, yeah, those are the key messages I took away. I wish I had a bit more time to get around some of the other stuff. They're big on the service providers. They think service providers are a big market for them, which is true. As Avaya falls down and the old Nortel acquisition starts to, you know, they don't... But a lot of people out there have got Nortel 8600 chassis running Metropolitan Ethernet in America and other countries around the world. And that gear is starting to get fairly old, and they'd have to start thinking about what they're going to do with that to replace it. And that's a lot of high-density Ethernet at high speeds, and this box is probably well-suited to that. It's not very intelligent Ethernet. It's just Ethernet, lots of it.
It's bridging, yeah.
Yeah, lots of bridging, so that sort of stuff.
Okay, so I found the MLX announcement. It's new 24-port 10 gig card. That's it.
Squee! How exciting. They also have done focused on network analytics, so they're still focusing on their S-Flow and their ASIC capabilities to say that it's got lots of capabilities to do deep packet inspection and to report about it on using various things.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
That's nice. Always good.
When they're saying it out loud, you sort of get the feeling that they're actually serious about it. You know, whereas a lot of companies had SNMP for years and just said, you know, wow, it's only there because it's on government tenders. And then in later years, we actually started to use it, and then it sort of got serious. So it's nice to see them talking about that. The other thing I noticed was I kept teasing him about Fibre Channel because, you know, I'm a bit cynical about Fibre Channel. And I got the impression that they got very, very positive. I got very positive messages to say, yeah, we know. And we don't really, you know, we want Ethernet to succeed. We're really keen on driving into this. Well, I guess if you're talking to the chief executive of the data center team, he's going to tell you that, isn't he? But I sort of, as I went around the room, I also met with their OpenStack people. So I met with Peter Moyer from the OpenStack, OpenFlow initiative, and he was very positive. And I spoke to a couple of other people in the OpenStack team, and they seemed to be very engaged in terms of participating in the quantum networking module for OpenStack, and they were able to show some quick demos, some very rough demos, because there's nothing good about OpenStack today.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. But they're showing that they are...
It's new black.
But they are participating and making sure that they're part of that, so that they are integrated into that networking stack. So they're not ignoring it, is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
So it, you know, plays well with others. Oh, and they're shipping VCS-enabled blades with certain server vendors. I'm not sure who those server vendors are.
Haven't heard anything.
No, they wouldn't name them. So obviously I'll have to go and find out myself, which I never will. Well, I think we've pretty much rounded it up. That's a quick run through. What do you think? Summary of the whole thing?
Well, you know, there's stuff, as John Hudson said. You know, you remember that thing, that quote where he started with, "We make stuff."
Yes.
Their stuff is good. They're still missing some bits and pieces. For example, I'll verify when it comes out eventually. It should be on their website today, the new network operating system. It's not there yet. They only support IPv4.
Yeah, I noticed that. Not a lot of talk about IPv4. But then the flip side of that is not a lot of people are actually doing IPv6.
I've just been speaking to a service provider that's doing, I don't want to say web hosting or co-location. Managed services is more like it.
Okay, all right.
And they are acutely short on IPv4 addresses.
Okay.
So they would love to go to IPv6, and they're saying, we have no experience because there's never been any money to invest in training. Mm-hmm. And some of our equipment is not ready. So, yes, there are people out there who think about IPv6, even in the data center context. And they would be willing to start a pilot, but... And vendors launching products with no IPv6 are not very helpful. Okay. And it's not just Brocade, by the way.
I just don't get the sense of, you know, I was thinking about it the other day, and I think I wrote about it on my blog sometime.
Oh, you did.
You know, just basically saying that, you know, Aaron's into the final phase in America of giving out the last...
Gripe is out of addresses.
Gripe is out. AppNIC is out. Afrinic's got loads, but it'll all come about when Aaron runs out, and then the vendors, and then, but even then, a lot of the carriers have still got, a lot of the service providers have got spare IPv4.
No, they have only a few months worth of addresses.
Well, maybe it'll come by the end of the year.
The registries wouldn't give them addresses unless they have demonstrated that they've used the previous ones. You couldn't hoard them.
Okay.
And the rules got stricter as we got closer to the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that there is this huge pool of public IPv4 addresses that's still available within service providers.
Okay.
It will be either IPv6 or carrier-grade NAT. Yeah, we love that.
Well, I hope not, because IPv6 is probably the first opportunity that a lot of companies are going to have to refresh their networking stacks.
Mm-hmm.
And once there's a clearly defined need, you know, end of life, end of something, end of support, you know, nobody wants to change their network because their network is, nobody wants to spend any money. Nobody wants to, you know, whatever the hell it is they want to do. Everybody wants to not spend money or not advance into the future. And the networking has been so problematic that nobody wants to go and buy new equipment because of fear of changing it. The network is the platform that supports everything, you know. I sit in meetings and say, you know, we should upgrade the network core. Can't do that.
No.
The whole network would, you know, the company would have to stop. And you go, well, yeah. You built a network that's got two core switches. And when we turn them off, when we reboot them, everything goes down. Maybe you shouldn't have built it that way. But it saves us money. Well,
yeah.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Okay. Well, let's wrap this one up, shall we, Ivan? I think we've talked it to death. Okay, well, I think that just about wraps this show up. We've sort of covered a bit about Brocade and where they sit in the market, some of the features there with Ivan, talked through some of the issues. I wanted to help me crystallize some of my ideas about where they were. So thank you, Mr. Peponiak, for joining the show again this week.
Oh, thanks for inviting me, Greg.
Where can people
it's
find...
It's always a pleasure.
And where can people find you?
Blog.ioshints.info, ipspace.net, and on Twitter, if you send me a message to @ioshints, I usually respond.
And also, you should be interested in Ivan's webinars. He has a bunch of training content, especially on data center fabrics, which actually compares all the vendors, Cisco, Juniper, Arista, Brocade.
Oh, thanks for mentioning that. Yeah, the next update session is in November.
Mm-hmm.
And I am doing, what's that called? Twice a year is called what in English?
Biannually?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or semi-annually. I never get that right. Oh, whatever. It's every 6 months. And so every 6 months I go through all the data sheets of all the vendors that are covered and all their documentation and spend like 5 days reading that stuff and getting sick. And in the end, I produce a few PowerPoint slides saying this is actually new. This is what vendor X did in the last 6 months.
Cool. I can highly recommend it to everybody. He does keep it updated, and you can buy a subscription. Not only does Ivan have stuff about the data centers, but he also has a number of other things about DMVPNs and a whole bunch of technologies that he does update and refresh through the year. It's like a real job and everything.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. And I recommend that you do. And, of course, I'm Greg Farrow. You can find me on my blog at etherealmind.com. And on the Twitters is at etherealmind. You can also find me on app.net as at etmd. And you can check out the website for the Packet Pushers at packetpushers.net. Feel free to leave comments on today's show. Tell us what we should be thinking and the sort of things that we should be doing. We always love to hear your feedback. You can also follow the Packet Pushers on at Packet Pushers on Twitter, and on Facebook as Packet Pushers. We'd love to hear from you. And as always, remember that too much networking would never be enough.